the end of the day, it's like, if you win the race and it's just you standing there alone, it's like, it's not fun to celebrate alone. I think it's really hard to go far without help. But the only way that people are going to help you achieve anything is if you help them at the same time. It's a mutual exchange of value.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
I wanted to start with content and then really get into your story in a minute, only because you posted a video, I think it may be months ago now, on your channel talking about a shift in your content that you were going to be posting, that you weren't going to be able to do all the content the way you used to do because you were going back into full-blown CEO mode. And this is something you said, because you said you're still going to like document it behind the scenes stuff, which I love. But this is what you said that resonated with me. You said, you have to know what kind of season you are in. And so you knew that you were in a season that needed to change. Can you unpack like what that season is for you? What does that mean? And then maybe I thought like bigger picture for everyone else listening, wow, having the self-awareness to know what season you were in might dictate your strategy and what you do, even if you were doing something that's working, you're willing to pivot.
Yeah. You know, it really came from, I felt like every week I was losing when it came to content. Like I felt like I wasn't able to keep up with the demands I'd put on myself. And to be frank, a lot of it came from, you know, when we started acquisition.com, Alex, he made content in our last companies, and then he started making content. We were selling the companies, and then I started making it a while after him. So he has a large head start on me. And I kind of just picked up what he was doing for content. Like I was like, what he's doing for YouTube, I'll just like mirror that, use the same people, use the same system, do that. Same with Twitter, same with Instagram, same with TikTok. And so I just kind of adapted his system. And one day I was pretty stressed because I made some changes internally to the team at acquisition.com. And so I was like, okay, I have to be this role for the next few months until I bring somebody in. And that's what's right for the business, right? But then I kind of looked up and I was like, gosh, doing content and running this business, I didn't do that in my last companies. And I also know what it's like to have split attention. What it felt like was that I had almost like two jobs. And I was like, this is not feasible for me. And so I met with our director of brand and I told him, and he was like, we need to completely redo what we're doing. Like the strategy that we have for Alex should not be what we have for Layla, because the way you guys operate is differently. The way that you work is different. Like Alex, his position, like we both define positions, right, in the company and in what we do together. It's like he has way more time allocated for content as I don't. So I try to fit it in and I have to seep it into weekends and mornings and nights to fit it in. And so that's what I was doing. And it just got to this point where I was like, this is not realistic for me, because what I know, Graham, is every time that I feel like I'm consistently losing, it's because I'm setting unrealistic expectations for myself. It's like, okay, so I've set this expectation for the last 4 months. I have literally not met it once and I am working my freaking butt off. So is it that I should work harder or do I need to change my expectation? And so I was like, I need to change my expectation. And in doing that, we basically reworked the strategy and to say like, okay, I'm doing a lot of these things, creating a lot of this stuff. We need to just have it be like the team has to work around me, work around my schedule, and they have to basically adapt to me rather than me adapting to this content structure we designed. And that's what I realized I was doing. I was adapting to fit in the system that they created for Alex. And so now what we did is we said there's two different systems and we have to create one for Layla. And I think it was just because of this feeling consistently week over week, like that I'm failing. And I didn't think that that was going to be productive, because the way I see content is it's not something I'm doing for like a season. I see content as something that I will do infinitely. Like, I don't know why I would ever stop doing it. Just like, I don't know why I would ever stop doing business. Like, it's just, that's what I want to do. And so I also know that in order to continue doing something in the long haul, you have to readjust your strategy. And if content is going to take, you know, 20 hours a week, I will never be able to keep up with it. Like, I will end up quitting. I won't do it because it doesn't make sense with what I do. And honestly, I don't know if it would make good content, because I think my content's good because I'm actually doing it and I have a lot of experience, and I don't know if I'll be able to even create the best content if I'm not doing those things. So that's where the decision came from. And I think that putting it out there was like almost like a relief for me, because I just didn't want to make a change in strategy and then people be what's going on? You know, like, why is the content not as good? All these things, et cetera. Yeah, but the irony of it is that actually my content has substantially increased since then, which I find so funny.
Wow. And I was wondering.
Yeah. It's actually really found like a, I don't know if like hit a vein, but I think because something that I really didn't like about my strategy before is it feels like everything was very heavily produced. Like, it's like, how inorganic is it for me to like sit in front of a camera with like four dudes in a room and then like rehearse a script that I wrote like 3 days ago? It's like, is that Layla or is that just like a talking head delivering like very plain, like unpalatable information? And so every time I would watch my videos, I was just like, oh, like that's not me. That's not my personality. That's not how I talk. That's not how I teach my team. And so the really cool part is that in seeking, in defining what season I was in and changing that strategy, it feels like I actually found this like really nice synergy where my content now is a better reflection of who I actually am and therefore actually does better because, you know, everyone can rehearse information on the internet. But I think that very few people are actually being themselves on the internet and putting out who they really are. And I think that being able to capture content in a way that makes it easy to be yourself, not hard to be yourself, is a winning strategy.
Wow. Gosh, I mean, there was so much in that. I 100% agree with you, because you talked on like two huge things. One is sustainability, because I'm with you. Like, content is a long game. It's so much fun if you find the right style for you. So I'm always asking myself and my students to find what is a sustainable content strategy or rhythm or cadence or type for you. As opposed to like, what could you do for 90 days? Anybody could do a lot for 90 days. So you really touched on sustainability, but I think you have to have the self-awareness, right? To know what you actually feel like you can do. So my question really to that is, was it like an easy decision for you? Like, I just got to make a change? Or do you feel, and I don't know the dynamic between you and Alex, let's say, but I know with my wife, like, is there any like, oh, well, if he can do it, I should be able to keep doing it. Was that a real thing for you?
I think that I always want to be better and improving. And so for me, I rely a lot on outside eyes. You know, like I asked Alex, I said, like, am I being unrealistic? Because I trust him and I value his opinion, like in saying like that I can't keep up with this. And he was like, no, you do way more in the business. You're on meetings all day, every day. Like, of course you can't do the same amount that I'm doing. This is my job. He was like, it's not your primary job. And so I think having that outside perspective and having somebody I trust that can give me that feedback is a good indicator for me, like, okay, I'm being too hard on myself, because I will try and do like three jobs at a time. You know what I mean? Like, and if someone was like, that's what it would take, then I'd be like, okay, you know, I'll do it. But I think asking people on the outside for feedback is really helpful when you're feeling, say, confused or stuck or emotional, because they're not, you know, and they can give you an unbiased opinion. So I feel like that was a really big unlock for me, because I trust his opinion.
Yeah, I love that. So I love the sustainability piece. I think that's wise. And then what you talked about, which was your content actually maybe seems more authentic now, and therefore it's more powerful now than before, because you're almost like Gary Vee, kind of like getting captured and like in the moment, and they get to look behind the scenes and see what you're doing. And so I think kudos to you, I guess is what I want to say, for having the guts to say, okay, I could do this style of content, and you've done it well. Like, your videos have always been great, but it's like, I think this is more authentic to what I feel comfortable doing right now. And I still think it will be valuable and instructive to others in its own way. And you had the guts to like pivot. And I think a lot of us get so stuck on the way we did something, especially if it has worked in the past, to be like, I'm going to do it this way. Cause what if you lose all the views or the momentum or whatever? So kudos to you on that. Have you felt better in the last couple of months, like in this rhythm? Is it working for you?
Totally. And the piece I'll say to that is, content, if you engineer an environment where it's very hard to be yourself when you're making content, because there's time pressure, there's tons of people watching you, it's on the spot, you know, you're trying to rehearse something you've written, then I think that you take a lot of the, like, what creates good content in a way out of it. Because it takes away a lot of your personality, because you're on the spot, you're rehearsing, you're nervous. And so you're more concerned with saying the right words than you are conveying the message. And so for me, you know, going more to like the captured style, basically, I'll describe it like this, right? So before I'm like, let me tell you how to run an effective meeting. And now I'm like, just record me having an effective meeting. That's the switch, right? Yeah. And so it's like, you know, also, I think that that's more engaging for a viewer because they can see what good looks like versus me telling them what good looks like. You know, I can't wait until we start having the team on all the videos that I can be like, this is what a good, you know, CFO looks like, rather than like telling them what a good CFO looks like. So I think that it's also much more powerful for the person on the other end. But at the end of the day, here's the biggest thing I've learned, which is you have to figure out what style content, in what format, in what way you enjoy doing. Because just like business, like people like, how do you keep going? What keeps you motivated? I'm like, listen, I like what I'm doing. Like, I don't need motivation. I enjoy what I'm doing. I have engineered an environment where what I am good at also aligns with adding value to the company. And so you have to do the same with content. How can you create content in a way that adds value to the viewers? The things that you like doing create good content that people like to consume. And so I think that a lot of people just, they're so busy looking at like hacking the algorithm, trying to see what other people are doing. I can't even tell you how many people just copy my damn videos. Whose videos do I watch? Nobody's. I don't watch anybody's content. Not one person. The only person I will watch is Alex. And so, you know, it's funny because I think if you constantly are comparing yourself to other people, trying to play the algorithm, trying to manufacture content to beat these other people, of course people can't keep making content because you've made it impossible to win and you're playing by other people's rules, not your own. And so I think it's like you have to play your game, which is like, screw what works, screw what you see works right now. And forget what other people are doing. What would work for you? What sounds exciting to you? What's a way, what's a novel way that you could capture content that other people aren't doing that you just think sounds cool? And I think that a lot of people just aren't using first principles to think through their content. They're just looking at what other people are doing and seeing how do I recreate that and get more clicks. Hey guys, a quick break to tell you that if you'd like to see more content from me that isn't just listening to my voice, you can go on and check out my YouTube channel as well. Just search Layla Hormozi and you'll see me in my face. Thanks again for listening and let's get back to the show.
Yep. Oh my gosh. That's so true. And we were talking before I hit record about my start on content, right? Was in the music space, and this was 2009, 10, 11. And I was making videos and I remember one day, looking at the computer and saying, should I be paying attention to what other people are doing? Cause I wasn't, like, I just had my head down. I mean, we were broke, right? We were on food stamps. I had a wife and a baby and I'm 26 and I'm like, I just need to find a way to make money online. So I'm just going to work hard and just pump out content. But after like a year of making content, I was like, should I be paying attention to like what really good content looks like? And I just was like, no, I'm just going to keep doing what feels, and it sounds so like vague, but it felt very clear to me what was missing, at least in my niche, the type of content, the way I was going to show up. And I didn't pay attention to the big ones for years and years and years. And it worked so well. And people were shocked that like, you just keep your head down. Like, you don't subscribe to other people's newsletters. I was like, I have unsubscribed from my business partner's newsletters because I don't want to see what they're doing because they're doing too many cool things. So that has served me well to kind of just do my thing. And I don't think enough people say that to your credit. So thanks for at least validating what I've been doing for 14 years.
Well, I think it's like you literally probably just thought to yourself, what would I want to consume? Right. And I think we're more alike than we think we are as humans. And so that's what I use for my content is like, what's content that I would want to watch? And I actually realized that a lot of the content that I make and I was making, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't want to watch that. Like I would, but it wouldn't make me want to keep coming back because there's some pieces that are lacking. You know, like I was like, my personality doesn't come through in any of my freaking content. You know, like there's no. And so I think that using that to guide you, I actually think that it's much more. I think it's a more intelligent strategy than people give it credit for, because I think that some of the best work that people do comes from creating something that they'd always wish that they had, whether it's a business or content.
100%. I love it. Okay. So you touched on this briefly, like motivation, like to keep going, to keep growing, like to take, you know, you guys are trying to take acquisition to a $1 billion company. You've done so much and you've had all these other companies before. Is it just the joy? Is it just the fun of the game? Is it just playing the game? Is it like, what drives you at this point? Is that it? Or is that it?
I don't know what drives me. I think that, like, if I break down what I actually believe, I think that I stumbled into business, Alex and I, we had a lot of things happen really well in the beginning that were really strong reinforcers. And I think that what happens is that a lot of people aren't good at something. And because they're not good at something, they don't keep doing it. But if you get immediate feedback from something that you says, I am good at it, it's an indicator, whether it's money, success, whatever, then you want to keep doing it because people actually tend to like the things that they're good at or they're familiar with. And so I think that I got a lot of really immediate reinforcers early on when we started in business. And that just like compounded to me liking business. I think that I actually view it more as, here's the set of goals that I have as Leila Hormozi. How do I engineer an environment that makes it as easy as possible to reach those goals? And that is the question that I constantly ask myself is, if something feels hard, okay, well then how would we create an environment that would make it feel easier? Like when people say they're not motivated, I'm like, well, look at your life. I wouldn't be either. Like, look at who you surround yourself with. Look at the environment that you work in. Look at the people that you talk to. Look at the content you consume. Of course you're not motivated. I look at my life and say, how can I engineer an office that makes me want to work? How can I engineer all the people around me that motivate me to want to achieve bigger things? How can I engineer anything that I consume in my mind to be things that only help me get towards that goal? And I think that things, oftentimes we're looking at like, how do I get more motivated? But it's like a lot of the times we have to relieve ourselves of constraints rather than seek things to motivate us. It's like, just get rid of the things that suppress you before you seek things to motivate you. Most people have suppressing environments. They have people that tell them they can't do things. They have surroundings that make it very hard to work. It's loud. It's not private, all these things. And it's like, let's just take care of those things first and then tell me if you're not motivated.
Wow. Wow, that's so, no one's really talking about that. I mean, that's so wise. Like, it's almost like, would you say, because what comes up for me is people don't even really know who they are or what they want until they can remove so many of the external things, like you said, the negative things, the whole, the suppressing things. And then they might be able to discover the type of person they want to become, the business they want to build, the life they want to build. Would you say that feels right?
I think that people who feel suppressed have no discretionary effort to give to themselves or others. And so if you remove suppression in all shapes and forms, people and things and places, then I think you have so much more discretionary effort that you can access to put towards the things that you want in life. And so that's how I view it, at least. I think when I want to achieve something and I feel like it's hard, it's usually because there's an environmental factor that makes it, that's suppressing me in some way. And if I'm able to remove that factor, then I have this discretionary effort that I can access to put towards this thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I love that. A subtraction first and then addition and change for after that. I love that. So let's talk about, what would you say, and I'm just curious, in your own words, like what would you say is your like secret sauce and your biggest value that you bring to the company and to companies in general? Like everyone's got their own thing that they're really good at. What do you think it is that for you that brings value to the company the most, that is probably what you love the most? And what can we learn from that too, whether we need to be that in our own business or have someone on our team that does what you do?
I think that it's probably, I have been this way for a long time. And then I stumbled into like the role of being CEO because I already naturally was inclined to these things, which is like, I love encouraging, developing, and helping people. Like genuinely at the end of the day, like when I met Alex, I was like, I remember he asked like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I just truly am really passionate about helping people. And I remember he said like, could you be passionate about helping people and making money? Because I had taken like, I had taken a step back in my career that I thought I would be able to learn more to help people more, but I was making way less money. And I thought that was a really good frame to think through. But like, I think at the end of the day, like I genuinely, I guess, like, I don't know if it's upbringing or what, I can't tell you like the cause, but I think I really enjoy helping people develop, helping them win. I don't like winning alone. And I think that that's actually a big advantage for me. Like I look at the platform of acquisition.com and I think to myself, like, how can I use this platform to make as many people employees of acquisition.com, companies of acquisition.com, and consumers of acquisition.com content, make all of them wealthy and as whatever you want to say, known as they want to be. It's like, I have two things that I can do, which is like, I know how to, you know, drive revenue. And I also know how to get people like mildly known or whatever. So it's like, how can I use those platforms and this platform to help everybody win? Because I think at the end of the day, it's like, if you win the race and it's just you standing there alone, it's like, it's not fun to celebrate alone. And so I view things through that lens. Wow. And I think that a lot of people only build things to serve themselves. And ironically, they don't even serve themselves, because I think it's really hard to go far without help. But the only way that people are going to help you achieve anything is if you help them at the same time. I think it's a mutual exchange of value. And so I look at every person that is an employee of acquisition.com. It's a mutual exchange of value. Like, just because I pay them money does not mean I get any discretionary effort from them. How I treat them and how much I help them equates to how much discretionary effort I get. The companies at acquisition.com, just because I invest in those companies does not mean that they're suddenly going to grow. How much discretionary effort I give those founders and those teams equates to how much more growth I'm going to see with those companies. And I think that it's all of the quote, like soft stuff that people don't want to do, you know, culture, talent management, all of those things. But I have literally never seen it not be the reason why a company fails, like not having those things. Like every company that doesn't have those things in place fails eventually. The companies that stand the test of time have something to that extent in place, and that's the reason why they're able to exist.